Joining me now with more on how the EPA is or isn't handling climate science is Lisa Friedman. She's a reporter with the New York Times Climate Desk following energy and environment issues in D.C. Lisa, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
About a week ago, EPA caused a furor here in New England by canceling three EPA scientist presentations at a conference about the state of Narragansett Bay. There were actually protests outside that meeting in Providence, Rhode Island. Did the EPA ever actually say why those talks were canceled?
You know, the most EPA has said about that is that it wasn't an EPA event, and that was sort of their final explanation in a follow-up story that that the Washington Post did. When we reported this, when we broke this story, John Conkus, an EPA spokesman who is a political official at EPA who has been reviewing contracts at the agency, said in an email to me that they would be allowed to attend the policy part of the event, just not the press conference. That was not, you know, what the EPA officials themselves had been told. And regardless, he confirmed that, you know, they wouldn't be presenting at either. He didn't provide an explanation. The EPA has not said this is because the event focused in large part on the effects of climate change to the Narragansett Bay. But that is certainly the reading that all of the scientists have had.
Well, shortly after the inauguration, going back several months, there was a temporary clampdown on EPA and other government scientists being allowed to speak to the public. And there was, at that point, a lot of concern about the possibility of continuing and broader muzzling of government scientists, particularly scientists who might be speaking about climate change. Do you see this example in Rhode Island as an isolated event, or do you see it as part of a broader pattern of how government scientists are or are not being allowed to continue their jobs?
I'm going to say both, because this is, as far as I know, one of the first real concrete sort of real-time examples of the fear that scientists have been talking about since January becoming a reality. You know, we have heard from scientists within the EPA that different types of cost-benefit analyses are used, for example, to determine whether regulations are proper or should be rolled back. But that kind of stuff is sort of hidden from public view, hard to kind of grasp. There's not a lot of examples that we've seen like this that are kind of blatant efforts to hold back scientists from discussing things that are not in line with where the administration is on policy. And so, is this part of a broader trend? A lot of people fear that it is and believe that it is. We're talking to scientists and other folks all the time. The level of fear and worry is intense, and everybody is looking to see what else they may be restrained from doing.
I'm talking with Lisa Friedman of the New York Times about EPA's handling of climate science. To list a few other things that might fit into that pattern, we've seen a number of scientific advisors to the EPA, either their contracts or their appointments not renewed, or some have actually actively resigned.
Absolutely.
It's not EPA, but the Department of Energy has apparently asked some grant holders to change climate change language in their project descriptions. And then we also got news, you reported recently, that the EPA has been putting their website, parts of it that were taken down shortly after the inauguration, they're putting those back up, but without the words climate change. I mean, how significant is it that climate change is not on the website?
It's a huge deal. I mean, not only is it not in the website, it's not in the agency's four-year strategic plan that just came out a couple weeks ago as well. It's not in the Interior Department's strategic plan. This is the blueprint for what the agency's priorities for tackling over the next 4 years will be. And it is clear that both the words climate change are verboten and the administration, you know, has no intention of speaking it, addressing it, dealing with it. What's notable about this is that, in part, is that we are about a couple weeks away from a major UN climate conference in which the U.S. is still participating, even though it's pulling out of the Paris Agreement. What is the administration's position on climate change? That's for anyone to say.
Meanwhile, the Government Accountability Office has released a report on the rising costs of natural disasters linked to climate change.
That's right.
Recommending that the president use this kind of information to inform climate policy and do something about climate change. It cites hundreds of billions of dollars, not just home damage, but lost labor productivity, diminished crop yields, all these different economic impacts. How is this report being received so far?
Well, this was a report that was requested by a bipartisan duo of lawmakers, Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington and Susan Collins, Republican of Maine.
And we should note, it was requested 2 years ago.
It was requested. This is 2 years in the making. And part of why it took so long is because this kind of modeling, marrying scientific and economic modeling, is new, it's difficult, and the ability to kind of map across the country where the economic pains and gains are going to be is not easy work. This is getting an enormous amount of traction in the public. I cannot tell you that it's getting a lot of attention in the administration. They haven't commented on it. At the same time, the administration, in fact, is rolling back a number of regulations that would have been aimed at not just mitigating climate change, not just curbing greenhouse gas emissions, but also making parts of the country safer from floods. I mean, a few weeks before the terrible hurricanes that hit first Texas and later Florida and the Virgin Islands, the federal government rolled back national flood standards that would have been aimed at helping to build back safer.
So we're seeing certainly not a lot of traction, as you said, with the White House from this new report, although you would think that perhaps if there were any argument that we're going to reach a really business-focused administration, it would be this economic argument.
A lot of people hope that it's the economic argument that will speak to the administration, that will speak to Republican lawmakers, and that remains to be seen. This has obviously become an incredibly political, ideological issue. It's not clear to me that even reports like this are cutting across those lines yet, with more than a few lawmakers like Senator Collins, who has been a longtime champion of climate policies.
That's Lisa Friedman. She's a reporter with the New York Times Climate Desk, focusing on energy and environmental policy in D.C. Lisa, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, what's driving the rise of mega wildfires and what science says we may or may not be able to do about them. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.